Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast, brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and with me, as always, is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Hey, John. Well, I'm doing really well. And we had a great Japan series, and I hope a lot of you people got to watch it. But either way, we're going to be talking about it.
Yep, the season started with a delay because of the earthquake and the tsunami on March 11th, and the season therefore got underway a little bit late, but it ended with a great Japan series.
Yep.
We said sayonara to the season with a big finale, a Game 7. It was great. So we're going to discuss a fantastic Japan series and address a listener question, so let's get started by clearing the bases.
Okay, this series was a little different, yeah?
Yeah, you know, home teams, I remember emailing you during the week, and I said the first right. home team to win a game in this series is going to win the series, and that's, I got lucky.
Of course, well, you did.
We predicted Hawks in five. We both did, so I really believed that they were going to win. I felt like they were the better team. They were definitely the better hitting team, and they pitched, I mean, of course, Chunichi's poor offense can make any staff look really a lot better than it is, but I mean, they really had to make good pitches. The Dragons competed.
Oh, I thought, yeah, in every sense of the word they did. And as far as being so even, you know, we looked at all the advantages, and I think before the series started, we didn't see anywhere that the Dragons were even. You know, I think they played in especially the Dragons' bullpen was as good as it can be.
I agree.
And the Hawks was not.
At the back of the bullpen at the beginning of the series, but that was it. You know, they only had...
Yeah, because they stopped using Mahara, and that was the thing. They made an adjustment and, you know, took Mara out of a pinch roll and boosted Falkenborg, and both managers had some surprises in middle relief and eventually in late relief, and it was a lot of fun.
It was good to see the Dragons push them to the limit. I mean, you know, they actually came into this game sweating, and guys looked pretty tight, and it looked like Sudeuchi couldn't breathe out there on the mound when he started his warm-ups, but, you know, he had a good first inning, and he got going. The Hawks beat the Dragons in seven games. Toshiya Sugiuchi, of all people.
Right.
Because he's a notorious postseason flopper.
you say that, but like I said, you know, he's the MVP of the 2003 Japan series. How can you call him he's not like Matsunaka, who couldn't hit.
He's not as, I guess it doesn't stand out as much. He just, you know, he didn't seem to win games in recent years.
Okay, yeah, but the point is, he does have a track record of winning big games. It's just that he's had a bad stretch.
Yeah.
So calling him a flop is a fairly harsh.
Oh, all right. I said flopper, but not a complete flop, just flopper.
Okay.
Sometimes he hit a belly whopper once in a while. But,
well, he had a couple of very good games.
Yes, he did.
The Japan series, so...
Yeah, and the Hawks win the final, Game 7, on Sunday, 3-0 at Yahoo Dome. Second shutout of the series. I actually thought, I was wondering how the Dragons, and to be honest, I didn't think, you know, like I said last week, I think Yoshimi was going to beat him once, and that was their one game. And if you want to go through some notes real quick, this was the first ever Japan series in which no team won a home game in as many as six games.
Right.
And then I guess it was 2000 that the Yomiuri Giants and Fukuoka Daiei Hawks.
Well, we were talking about this last show after game two, that the Giants had won, the Hawks had won the first two games in Tokyo and never won again.
Right.
And the first home team to win was the Giants when they clinched it in game six at Tokyo Dome. We had another series that went five games before the home team won.
Right. And another note was that the Hawks in 1999, when they played the Dragons at Nagoya Dome, they swept the three middle games there. So they're actually 6-0 lifetime versus the Dragons in the Japan series at Nagoya Dome.
Okay, and take this one. Then the Dragons tonight lost their four-game winning streak in Fukuoka. Their four-game Japan series winning streak, because they won game two in 1999. Did they win the opener? Ah, I hope I'm not wrong.
No, they won game two.
They won game two. Noguchi won game two, I think.
That's correct. No. It was Kenshi Kawakami. Kawakami won Kawakami. Game 2.
Okay. And then they won they won game 1 and 2 here and game 6 here. So they had a 4-game winning streak, and they could have had they had a 5-game winning streak, they would have won this Japan series.
That's right. There were 4 2-1 scores.
Yep.
In the series, the Dragons won 3 of those.
Big surprise there.
They had a 5-day gap between victories. You don't usually see that in the Japan series and have it still go. You know, it's usually if you go 5 days without a victory, usually you're not playing anymore.
Yeah, that means that the next time you're playing is in April.
And I think one of the worst batting performances in Japan series history, Motonobu Tanishige,
oh,
the Dragons, went 0-20.
I know.
And
this is so sad.
I know. I love the guy. Hey, he finished it off with 3 strikeouts, and it was just, I guess, the perfect way to just say, you know,
when
what?
This guy came in. This guy is one of the tremendous Japan Series players in history. Not only as a catcher, but as a catcher, he used to hit like a first baseman, or I should say, you know, a center fielder or something, but, He was always a good hitting catcher, but I remember in the 2007 series, he burned the fighter. He just roasted the fighters, and Trey Hillman was going, well, yeah, Tanishige ain't what he used to be.
Yeah, right.
And he smoked him.
Yeah, he did. He did. He
ain't what he used to be, but in the Japan series he has been, but this year the magic wasn't there.
No, it was gone. He looked like he was half dead or half asleep. I mean, you know, he had a lot of hittable pitches. He took some decent swings, but he wasn't squaring anything up. He was barely making contact, and tonight was the worst of it. I mean, he looked overmatched at every at bat, and like I said, struck out 3 times to finish it off. So we don't know if he's going to be back. I'm assuming he's going to be back.
Well,
sure, I can't imagine him.
And we had a kind of interesting MVP selection.
40-year-old Hiroki Kokubo. Now, I mean, you and I talked about it before we started taping, and
sure.
I mean, it was hard to pick an MVP because actually the Hawks had very, very good contributions throughout the lineup and on the mound.
Right.
So it was really hard to pick an MVP because people, you know, it wasn't like the Dragons who only had a couple people hit and a couple people, everybody pitched well, I think, but
pretty much.
But they only had a couple of guys hit, so Kokubo, I mean, he didn't really bat that well overall.
No, it's a mystery to me. I mean, to be honest, I have to think if he didn't dive into the photographers or into the field seats there last night, then he doesn't
game 6,
win.
Yeah. Tamura in his first Japan series, he hits .370,
yep.
And he had a home run. He had 4 hits tonight.
He had a big home run in that 4-2 win.
Yep. But Kokubo was hitless tonight in 4 at-bats.
Sugiuchi
was another one. He pitched well twice. He gave up the run late in game 2. And
right.
They went into extra innings, and so he got a no decision, but he pitched well. He pitched very well. And he pitched well again tonight. He looked like he was going to throw a no-hitter for a while.
Setsu.
Setsu was a great
Kobashi
one. He pitches game 3, and you know, it was so funny. I want to get to it later, but and this is what I love, and I really have to compliment the Hawks skipper Koji Akiyama. He really went outside the box. He
absolutely
made all kinds of adjustments, and he really went for this thing. He didn't leave anything to chance. He knew he had a good team, but he knew he had to manage it well to win, and he made the effort.
Well, I think there's a contradiction in there in what you're saying. Everything is susceptible to chance. There's nothing you can do that's going to absolutely work.
Sure.
But what I think probably a better way, perhaps a better way to say it is, he wasn't afraid of taking chances, and he wasn't going to stick with something that he didn't think was going to work.
Okay.
Instead, he would take chance on using somebody in a different role that they hadn't been using. They haven't been used recently. Of course, the other thing about Setsu is that, you know, it's almost like if you're like me, you've almost forgotten where he came from. He's a first-year starter this year.
That's right.
He was a Rookie of the Year middle reliever, so this guy knows what's going on in the bullpen.
Yeah, it was no surprise, you know, when I saw him come out of the bullpen and saw him on the mound out there, I'm like, well, this is a familiar role to him. It's not something that he hasn't done. It's just that he hasn't done it this season.
Right.
And, you know, it took him a couple, three pitches to get it into a groove. And once he did, I mean, it was lights out in that game.
I'll tell you, this has been such a fun, you know, this whole postseason has been so much fun because of this freewheeling efforts, the freewheeling use of starters in relief and just, you know, throwing the throttle open by these managers. I mean, Watanabe Hisanobu did it in Sapporo, bringing Ishii in to relieve for Wakui, and Ogawa was doing it all over the place. You never knew which starter was coming out of the bullpen in the next inning.
Right.
The Hawks manager. The Swallows
manager, right, yeah.
And everything was up for grabs. It was like this whole postseason was infected with, what's the word I'm looking for, improvisation. Or planned craziness, perhaps, but it was good fun.
And it's I mean, normally it's like the Chunichi bullpen. You basically know when you get to, you know, inning X, pitcher B is going to be out there on the mound, and probably for this guy, pitcher C is going to be out there. And it's kind of a song and dance, but and for them, for this series, it pretty much was, because we didn't get a lot of surprises. Although I think Ochai hit the panic button tonight early on, yanking Yamai in the third inning. I think that kind of sent the wrong message to his team, but oh well.
Well, that's the same, you know, on the other hand, like you said, or like I said, that nothing you know is going to work, but he had something that he thought was a better option, and there's no time to waste, so push it and go for it and see, you know, roll the dice and see what happens. So I think that's what made this series so much fun. Last year was kind of let's not even waste any time talking about last year, which was a very entertaining series in its own right. But
yeah, another seven-game series, yeah.
But this was just so much gosh darn fun. And the fact that there was no runs really didn't make it less entertaining.
Right. I mean, you know, all the games were close. Yeah, there were few runs, few chances. The Dragons kept going down in order each inning, you know, a lot of times, and especially in the games at Nagoya Dome. But still, the games were, I mean, every pitch meant so much, and every at bat meant so much, and every play in the field, you know, guys crashing into walls, in Nagoya Dome, Koike messing up his elbow. And then you had guys diving in the stands. I think there were four pretty good plays last night in game six, including the final play of the game where Morino goes over to the foul. Over by the stands and off of first base, and he has to fight. I don't know what they call him here in Japan. In Angel Stadium, they call them thunder sticks, the little stick balloon things that they that
all
the
right,
fans have.
Whatever. Cheer together. Sticks, I think cheer they call
sticks.
Them.
Okay. And somebody's taking a whack at him with a cheer stick, and he still makes the play.
Man.
There were a lot of good defensive plays. I mean, you know, everything meant so much, even though there weren't a lot of runs scored. So, and it's like you said. So let's talk about game three. Let's see, that was at Nagoya Dome, and the Dragons had won the first two, and they came home, and Maximum Nelson just went a little wild.
He was missing some of his pitches there, and it cost him.
Yeah, he couldn't locate well, and he gave up the run early in the first inning, and the Dragons just never really recovered. But he just didn't pitch well the rest of the. Well, he was in and out, and then or off and on, I should say, and then gone in the sixth inning. He ends up giving up three runs, two earned. Where he ended up giving up a run in the, I'm looking it up now here as we speak, in the fourth inning. And, that pretty much, you know, there's a two-run home run. Tamura hits it, to left. That made it 3-0, and the way the Dragons had not scored many runs at all, it looked like three runs were going to be enough, and it ended up being enough, more than enough.
I mean, I go through these scores and I look, I'm sort of looking, trying to figure out why anybody picked Kokubo as the MVP of the series, and I'm still kind of mystified. Every time I see him try to turn around and look, he's sort of missing from the game. Although he had the big game in game four when he was 2-for-4 and he had an RB, you know, he drove in the winning run in the first inning. But, Tamura drove in the insurance run and, what, did they just pick the old guy?
Maybe.
I'm sorry.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you know, Tamura had a good series. Kawasaki had a good series. I mean, all these guys, you know, did what they usually do, which is, you know, drive-in runs. The guys who are supposed to drive in runs drove in runs. The guys who are supposed to get on base and set the table were able to do that. And the, you know, as good as the Central League's top pitching staff was, they couldn't keep those guys off base, and they couldn't keep the other guys from doing their jobs key moments.
They were as good. I'll tell you, in key moments, I mean, Yoshimi, they should have, in game two, they should have just beat Yoshimi over the head, but he wouldn't let anybody, you know, he wouldn't let any of those runners cross the plate. They had plenty of chances, but as soon as there were runners in scoring position, it was lights out.
Yeah.
So it was sort of like dead ball baseball. You know, you save your best stuff for when you're in trouble.
Right. So then in game three, Setsu goes 7 innings.
Yep.
Just amazing. He gives up 1 run, 4 hits, struck out 8, walked a couple, and he gets the victory. And that was the day that Mahara didn't get a chance to prove he was ready to come back out after losing the first 2 games out of the bullpen.
Right.
They didn't even give him a shot. Falkenborg shut it down.
He
could have been there. Yeah. Another MVP candidate.
Falkenborg, yeah. Yeah, if he doesn't get hit, on the forearm or the elbow tonight,
even with that, I mean, he had already pitched an inning. He was doing well. It wasn't, you know, they just sent him out there for the second inning. They were going to try to close it out with him. So
we had a couple of surprises as we were talking before. Kanazawa, who was really a nobody in the Hawks bullpen. I mean, he's a mop up guy. He's one of the guys they throw out there, you know, just to see if he's still alive, you know, test him, see if he's still breathing.
Well, like I said earlier, the Dragons lineup can make, you know, those guys look great, and I think that was part of it. But he pitched well. He also pitched well.
Yeah. Okay. So they had these guys coming out, and they were pitching as you know, with the exception of Mahara, the Hawks bullpen was as good as we thought. Mahara was a little under, but all in all, they were about as good as advertised, and the Dragons were better, and, you know, they were up at the top of their game. So anyway, we get into game three, and Setsu takes over game three, and we have, you know, it's the most one-sided game so far in the series.
Yeah, big 4-2 decision there.
I know. Well, it's been 2-1, 2-1, and it's been so razor, razor thin, the margin in this. So no surprise that errors and is going to make a big, big difference.
Right. And then in game four,
just giving the Hawks 12 hits as part of that.
Yeah, I mean they gave up hits. You know, it was a kind of a bend and don't break kind of a situation, but they broke with those home runs. But the hits were, I mean, basically harmless. They had 2 hits in the second, a hit in the third, hit a double in the fifth. 2 more hits in the seventh, and a single in the seventh, and none of them ended up figuring in the scoring, including, you know, it was a solo home run in the eighth inning, and then a single later on that didn't figure in the scoring. So a bunch of hits.
Well, true. They had a hit. They had at least two runners on in almost every inning. They had runners in scoring position in almost every inning, and that's really, to be honest, what good teams do.
That's what they do.
They put runners in base.
So then,
and they leave a lot on base.
Yes, they do. Well,
okay. Anyway, moving along.
And then in game four, you know, the biggest situation in that game, I think there were two. The first one was the first inning. Ended up being a 2-1 score. Your MVP, Hiroki Kokubo, knocks in a run with a single. And then Nobuhiro Matsuda hits a ball that we thought was going to be a double play ball.
Right.
And it ends up just being a force, and then Shunichi's shortstop, Masahiro Araki, throws the ball away. Another run comes in, and that ends up being the run that beats them because the Dragons couldn't score. It was a 2-1 score.
Right.
The other big situation in that game was Masahiko Morifuku, the little lefty, the tiny lefty. What is he? 171 centimeters?
Yeah, really the single... You know, I don't want the clutch performance of the series, at least the most, I don't know clutch, but certainly the most dramatic.
I have a question. Do they let that guy pitch outside when it's windy? Because, you know, he might blow away.
Ow!
What is he?
Were you watching the NHK feed? tonight? NXT?
I was watching both, but I mean, I really couldn't sit still. I was doing exercises, watching dishes. I mean, I couldn't sit still.
Okay, well, I was watching Nomura, and he managed Mori Fuku at Chidax.
Uh-huh.
And he was saying something like, I kept telling him, you're never going to be a pro because you're just too small. And he says, you know, you're too small. You don't throw hard enough. So, you know, no pro team's ever going to make it. And he's saying that Mori Fuku kept saying to him, it's more about, you know, it's at some point, it's more about control than how hard you throw. And he proved it.
Yeah, and you know, he also has that little deceptive motion, like a half right. a lefty Louis Tiant kind of a thing going on there on the mound where he twists his body away from the batter and then comes back right. and he hides the ball a little bit so it comes out late. So.
Which is very hard to do for a true side armor.
Right.
Because the ball hangs out there.
Right, and then he's got that motion and then the ball is moving. I mean, he's a mess. I mean, you know, he's nasty, the face. What is he? They list him at 171 centimeters and I almost stepped on him when I did an interview earlier this year.
You said I'm as mean as you, John. I don't step on people. Well, I don't say I was going to step on them.
I saw something out of the corner of my eye, so I didn't put my foot down, and I looked at it, and it was Mori Fuku, and I said, hey, give me an interview. So, and they listed at 65 kilograms, and I think that's a stretch. I mean, come on.
Maybe 60.
Like I said, do they really? I mean, I could literally see him at Chiba on a good windy day. I mean, he'd wind up the pitch and he'd just float off in the center field there like a leaf.
Well, he doesn't wind up anyway. He pitches in the stretch all the time. So I see you're stretching too. You're exaggerating.
All right. But he came in with none out and the bases loaded in the sixth inning, and he did this great escape job, kept the Dragons off the scoreboard. And
a 2-1 game.
And a 2-1 game that really turned the series around because you know, and as I was watching, I'm thinking, okay, a fly ball gets this thing even. And I honestly thought at that point that the Dragons would squeeze. And this is one of the things I was thinking that Ochai made kind of, not a mistake, but I mean, I think he got greedy. I think, in normal situations, even though, the infield's playing in, you just want to make contact and get that game even and then work from there. And that's especially the way the games were going in the series.
Right.
I think that.
Well, he could have done it, you know, he could have done that with Koike. Because Koike is a really good bunter.
He is, because I don't know that he is. I don't.
Well, he's led he has led the Central League in sacrifices, so I assume he can't bunt.
Okay.
When he's with the Bay Stars.
Right.
So.
Well, and you know he has been a good player, but I mean he really didn't look comfortable in the batter's box, and he looked like he'd rather be any place but where he was, and he ended up striking out, and then.
Maybe that's the thing. They should have squeezed with him, and he would have been more in his comfort zone.
Perhaps.
I don't know anyone's going to be his comfort zone. You know, the thing to me about that inning was, here you've got a lefty, you've got a sidearm lefty, against three right-handed batters, and it's lights out.
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to talk about the other at bat by Ryosuke Hirata. He's a guy, he's kind of a free swinger. He really reminds me of some of the Latin players. If it's close, he's hacking. And he tries to maybe recognize the pitch when it's about halfway to home plate.
Okay.
Otherwise, if it looks anywhere in the strike zone, he's swinging in. He managed to make contact, and when he made contact with his fly ball that ultimately Seiichi Uchikawa caught.
Yeah,
but when he made contact with it, I thought, okay, well, there, you know, that looks like it's deep enough, and he just, you know, you don't get good swings. This is the thing with the whole series and with the Dragons, they looked at a lot of pitches that were hittable. They watched them go by, and then they were trying to hit pitches that were not as hittable, and a lot of times they didn't even make really good contact. You know, they didn't sting a lot of even. They didn't have a lot of hard hit outs. They were most of their outs were just easy outs, and that was one of them where, at first I thought he actually made good contact, but in the end we saw that he didn't make good contact at all. And Uchikawa had to come in and get that ball. I thought it was a sacrifice fly when it came off the bat. Watching on TV.
Really.
Watching on TV, I thought he actually squared it up. It's just that he got under it so much that it ended up being a pop fly. But it was hard to tell on TV. You know, the moment he hit it, that was my first reaction when he hit it. I didn't.
My feeling was it was going to drop for a single.
Really, I didn't.
Which it nearly did.
It nearly did, but you know, again, They usually pull the outfielders and play them in as well in those situations. So I think, it's hard to say when you don't get to cover the games, but I thought Uchikawa was probably.
Wow!
Did I sneak that in there? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. And then DJ Holton pitches, five plus strong innings, and he actually was the pitcher who loaded the bases with no one out, and Morikawa bailed him out, so he gets the victory. So congratulations to DJ. I sent him an email right away and said, hey, man, congratulations. And he said it was a battle out there. That was his comment.
he left the battle out for Morifuku to clean up. But anyway, that's all right because, that's what teamwork's all about.
That's it. So then in game five, which I imagine, and then we were talking in the office on probably, when was it? It must have been Tuesday, I said. Now you think if the Dragons lose these first two games that they would bring Chen back on short rest. And I think you didn't hear me say it, probably, is what happened. And
I didn't think it was going to happen.
You didn't think it was going to happen. And so, as it happened, they dropped the first two games, and they brought Chen back on short rest. The Tin Man! What's up, Tin Man? And he had trouble with everything early in this game. He couldn't control anything. He didn't have great velocity. And he wants to go to the States. That's when you pitch every fifth day. So, you better get used to it, buddy, if you really want to go and pitch in the majors, because, that's not short rest, I'll have you know. That's normal rest. The Dragons end up losing the game 5-0. I mean, they didn't score anyway, but he didn't help them giving up a first inning run, and then he was just a mess.
So we have another win by another Hawks starter.
Right.
And, okay, now here are the wins by the Hawks starters. We have Setsu, Holton, Yamada, Sugiuchi, Holton needed all the help in the world, and Setsu and Yamada, number 4 and 5.
Yeah,
we didn't think we'd see Yamada. We didn't know who was going to come in fifth, but we knew it'd be somebody good. So
I didn't think we'd see Yamada unless, and I think I said it, unless depending on what the situation was, and since they were winning,
right?
I think they wanted, and it turned out to be the perfect call. Again, Akiyama making the right call. They wanted to have their best two guys at home if the series went that long.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to finish up. I mean, that's why I probably would have started the series with Wada so that I could finish with Wada.
Right.
But they started, I'm sorry, they,
Sugiuchi. They did start the series with Wada.
Yeah, it was Sugiuchi, but I would want to finish the series with Wada, not Sugiuchi out there. But it worked out for him. Again, right call, I think so.
Okay. This game we had another surprise. Of course, then we have the surprise number two,
mm-hmm.
with Setsu coming out in relief of Yamada. Now, Yamada was, he was okay.
He was okay. He didn't give up anything.
He was nothing special. No, he didn't give up anything, and he got the job done. And then for the seventh inning, here's Mr. Setsu back in his old role.
Yeah, and I saw that, and I'm like, oh, God.
And walks the first battery faces.
Well, wait a minute. Before that, I'm like, what's that? He just pitched the other night. He just pitched two nights ago. He went 7 innings, 119 pitches, was it? 119, 110, you can tell me. Here he is again, and so immediately.
110 pitches in 7 innings.
110.
And on one day rest, he's back throwing an inning in the bullpen, out of the bullpen.
So I emailed Jason of the Japan Times right away, and I said, Akiyama is the devil. Why would he do something like this? He's the devil. But it was a great.
He was getting in the mood, I'll tell you. That's what I was talking about. This postseason, it was just superb, Who have I got to pitch? Well, he had choices. Yes, well, could have brought in Morifuku. He could have brought in Kanazawa again, but...
Could have brought in Mahara.
Well, he did bring in Mahara.
Well, eventually he brought him in, but I was telling you, I was telling Jason...
That was game five. He brought in Mahara with a 3-run lead. 5-run lead, was it?
Yeah, Mahara pitched in this game. He pitched after Morifuku. He pitched the ninth. 5-0 game. Yeah, he pitched.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm zipping back and I'm toggling back and forth from game to game. So
well, put your hands down and we'll figure it out. No, Setsu on the mound was a shocker to me, and like that's what I meant. Leaving nothing to chance. I don't think You know, I was telling Jason, I was telling everybody, you know, Mahara has been banished. We might never see him again in this series if all the games are closed. And luckily for him, he was able to get out there with a 5-run lead and prove that he could get, you know, he could get out. So he gave up a hit, but that was it, and he got out of the inning and in the ninth.
That was a big thing. However, yeah, that was a big thing. I think if they had to go to game 8 or they had to go to 15 innings tonight, that Mahara had shown that, you know, he could do something. He wasn't a zero out there.
True, but we know that he had lost the manager's confidence. And
yeah, he was probably the fifth in order to go out on the mound tonight. So we didn't get that far.
No, I was thinking, you know, I had before the game started had all these scenarios running through my head, and I imagined, okay, like last year, I think it was a 12-inning game in Game 7 last year between the Marines and the Dragons. I said, it gets to be the 12th inning, you know, and Mahara has already pitched. I think they're going to ring Jim Allen's phone and see if he can get down there and warm it up. Because they're going to be out of pitchers, you know.
No, because they would only do that because they know that I can't throw it as far as home plate. And guys will be trying to hit it so hard that they'll be swinging and missing.
Throw that Bugs Bunny change up again, please.
That's my only pitch, babe. I got to roll it up there.
Big lollipop curve. Well, so, yes, that's it. Gets him through.
40-foot curve, dude.
Yes, that's him. Gets him through. Morihuku Mahara to close it out, 5-0. And all of a sudden, they've swept in Chunichi Land. And I feel sorry. You know, this is the thing about all these home teams, or, you know, all the games at home being lost early on. I feel sorry for those fans who pay really good money.
Because all they do in Japan is come to see their team win. And if they, right, you know, despite the quality of the game, well, it's a complete waste of time if your team doesn't win.
It is, and it really hurts. It really, really hurts. And that stadium still is difficult to get to, and, you know, I just felt really sorry for all. I mean, even the fans in Fukuoka having to see all those losses before they actually finished it out. But
hey, they both of them got to see 3 losses.
That's
so
right. That's right. So then Game 6 comes along, and, you know, again, I just assumed that the Hawks would finish it out on Saturday, and Shinichi Ace, Kazuki Yoshimi, was just outstanding for the Dragons. He was just on it, and he was on it from the first pitch. He kept guys off balance. He hit all his spots. You know, if it weren't for this triple, was it a triple by Honda? Yeah, the triple to open the inning
in the fourth.
And then a really good piece of hitting by the batting champion, Seiji Uchikawa. Yeah, really good.
He had a few.
But including Game 7, he had an RBI single late.
Sure.
But he fouled off some tough pitches and then got a hit on a pitch down and in and hit it the other way somehow. I mean, usually, you know, you just kind of break your bat and ground out the second on a pitch like that, but
right.
he got it. He muscled it out. And
yeah, they had one chance and they cashed it in, but they didn't get many chances.
Well, and the Dragons had their one chance in the first inning and got 2 runs on a triple by Kazuhiro Wada, and then that's it. You know, they're done. And about the 5th inning, I said, you know what? It doesn't look like they're going to score again tonight. So I guess they're going to try to finish this thing off the way they do. And that's what they do. And, you know, I think we talked about it before we started taping, but they really, really battle.
Right.
And even when they're going down batter after batter, they're putting up some good at bats sometimes. I mean, most of the time they're putting up some good at bats, and they don't usually let a lot of good, you know, good-looking pitches zip by and without giving them a good swing.
Well, this was another one. Well, actually, they did have another chance. Already forgotten. They had another chance in the 9th inning.
Yeah, all right.
But Mahara comes in, but Mahara, you know, keeps him from making the most of it, even though he puts a couple of runners on. So, well,
yeah,
anyway,
sort
so that
of.
One,
I mean,
that's a chance, but that's a chance
did
to put the game away, and they didn't, you know, didn't happen.
Well, what they did was they, you know, he gave up a single to Wada, but then
right.
they walked the pinch hitter, Nomoto.
After the sacrifice. sacrifice, yeah.
Yeah, to get to Tanishige, who hadn't had a hit since, when I think I saw it, was October 26th or something like that, October 20th, I don't know.
Yeah, I think he was about 2 years, no, okay. He was, no, he was, I mean, Tanishige was, as we just talked about, he had quite an amazing season. It was like, it was, you know, I think the answer with Tanishige is that in September, he had some injuries this year, mm-hmm. kept him out of the lineup.
Which was a good thing, yeah. It allowed him to stay fresh.
Oh, I think what happened, it didn't allow him to stay fresh, but coming back from injury, I think he sold his soul to the devil. And he comes back, and he's hitting like Sadaharu Oh. But they're playing him at first base. They're practically, they did everything but put him in the cleanup spot. And unfortunately, the bill came due in the Japan series.
I was going to ask you, if he sold his soul to the devil, what happened, you know, in November?
No, well, that's the bill came due. The time limit ran out, and what he did was forget that the Japan series started in November instead of October this year.
Maybe he could go and get another soul and just bring this in. Can I trade this in? Obviously, mine's not good enough. It's not working.
But I think that's what happened, because there's no other explanation for going 0 for the postseason.
Yeah, he was, I mean, I love the guy. I mean, he's a good player. He wasn't throwing out many runners.
Good interview? And for a reporter, that's even better. He's a good interview. Forget the batting. He'll talk.
But, you know, he wasn't throwing out a lot of runners. It wasn't all his fault. Pitchers were trying to hold guys on. But, of course, you know, it's a matter of teamwork. But he was rushing the ball. He wasn't setting his feet and throwing. He was, you know, trying to arm the ball, or just before setting his feet, just trying to muscle it out there before, you know, just get rid of it quickly. And when he started, you know, planting his foot and throwing, I think he had one runner thrown out tonight early on, and then they stole into the base later on.
Yeah, he did make a few better throws. The second one, he was pushing it because he got no velocity on the ball. He threw a big lollipop. He got a great quick release, and then the ball just floated.
Yeah, well, I actually thought early on in the first inning when he got the out call that was a safe, that should have been a safe call. I thought the second one was an out call, but they called him safe. So
those were, I did not see.
But that's what happens.
We're talking about games that I see bits and chunks of because I'm commuting back from the office.
No problem. So I mean, you know, that's what I saw, but, you know, the human element that we talked about on an earlier podcast, that's what happens. But it was 50-50, and, you know, they got one call, and they didn't get the other one, and I think, you know, in the end, they got what they deserved there. But, yeah, you know, Hasegawa was another guy who, early on in the series, we talked about, they weren't letting him bat, and, you know, he batted pretty well. He's another guy who could have been a candidate for MVP.
Sure.
I mean, you know, they had contributions throughout their lineup.
Matsuda, I mean, had a pretty good series. He had some impact moments. It's hard to think of a guy, you know, who in the Hawks was a complete and total bust other than Mahara. And it's about Mahara.
Yep.
I mean, Fukuda didn't play much of a role in there, but he's a marginal player to begin with. But, yeah, the bust has to be Mahara. And if you take... To be honest, if you take Mahara out of the equation, I don't think the Dragons win. I don't think they win two games.
Well, you know, I thought about that too. But if it wasn't Mahara, they would have had someone else out there. Now, maybe they wouldn't have won in the 10th inning in those two first games. But maybe they would have won later on. I mean, I don't think you could. I don't think.
No, I'm just saying that if you take bad performance out, whereas with the Dragons, it would be. It's a lot harder to say that. Well, if we had this one other better performance, you know, we would have been much better.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen Keiji Oyama, is that his name? The backup catcher. I would have liked to have seen him get some at bats, at least as a pinch hitter or something, because, you know, and maybe to play for Shige. I think they you know, he's such an important role, plays such an important role on the Dragons team that they don't want to take him out, but I think you know, they got through a long spell this season without him, and Oyama played many of those games, and he was very productive at the plate, and I just think they could have used his bat if they weren't going to take Shige out of the game. So,
Well, he couldn't have done worse. And I have to think, regardless of, you know, how well he called the pitches, and, you know, I think he helped him a little bit there, but the constant string of outs, you have to be right. You know, they could have done better having the pitcher bat and having a DH for Tanishige.
Yep. Yeah, that was one of the jokes I...
No, it was a joke, but...
Yeah, but yeah, it was true. I mean, Chen made better contact. Like I said, the ball was foul, but he hit it square and he hit it hard and got the pitcher's attention, and then the pitcher started making pitches at it, you know, to him instead of just loafing it up there. Because he was...
Yeah, okay, well, if Tanishige hit... Yeah, Tanishige hits the way... Well, of course, you know, the Japan series is different because you're playing good defense and good teams, and
right.
And during the season, it's much less even because you face teams that are resting their best players. You face teams that aren't very good. You face you play in good hitters' parks, neither of which these are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it is a very different setup, and you have to be prepared to not score as much as you usually do.
So what's your impression of this year's Japan series?
Oh, other than great fun, yeah, Dragons did a heck of a job to hang in there. They were really overmatched, and the bullpen was completely up to snuff. And I think Wada had some. I was very impressed with a lot of his at bats. I thought Tony Blanco could easily have saved those first two games. He saved game one with his glove.
With the glove, yeah. I didn't know that he knew what that thing was at the end of his hand.
Yeah,
I think
they
said, "Hey, put this on and go out there so you look like the other guys."
He snares a shot. It's not an easy play. He snares a shot, and if he doesn't, the Hawks win game one, 3-1.
Yep, and he had another nice play today as well.
So he made some plays. He had one that reminded us that he's Tony B, but. Now, he played some good defense out there, and that's really what the Dragons need to do, and what they did when they won.
Yep, and I read yesterday that he and Nelson and Yelbert Soto,
yep. Yep.
Will all be back next season, so we can look forward to seeing them again. My impression was, you know, Ochiai unfortunately leaves into this abyss where we don't know. You know, where he's going to pop up next and where he's going to go or anything, but it's too bad they couldn't send him off with the victory, because now what, he's been to five Japan series and he's only won one of them. This is the third time it's gone to seven games, if I'm correct. In 2004, they went to seven games.
Correct.
In 2006, they played five. In 2007, they played five. And last year, they played seven. And
right.
This year they played seven, so this is the third time he's lost a game seven. I thought his team was overmatched. I thought he made some moves. You know, like I said, I thought in the Morty Fuku game that with the score 2-1, I think, you know, bunting and or just, you know, having the guy try to get the game even with something other than having him swing away was a better route to go. But I mean, you know,
hey. This team, at the beginning of the year, you know, you look at this team and you had to think, well, they're not going to make it to the Japan Series.
Well, I had no reason to think that they weren't. They were the same team, essentially, that they had last year with a little additional power with Mr. Guzman joining the team. So I thought they were going to have a little bit more power and a little bit more thump, and their pitching was going to be good, so I figured they would be back. Somehow, I didn't pick them to win the league title, but I knew that they would compete well because that's what OGI teams do.
That is what they do well, and that is really the secret there. They're not a powerhouse. They're not a, I don't know. He's won with teams that really had no business getting as far as they've done. Although the Central League was, you know, was not a, there wasn't a lot of big competition at the top. It was a lot of scratch and run. Offense, and the Dragons are pretty good at that from the beginning.
Yep.
You know, from the get-go, that's their plan. Same as the Swallows, and those two teams made out like bandits this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, but the whole point being, yeah, he just did a, he did a, he does a wonderful, wonderful job, and I don't think, well, okay, well, perhaps, I guess the red herring in that question, do you think they'd be in the Japan series, is a red herring, because if you put the Dragons with, you put that group of players with another manager,
mm-hmm.
do you see them as Japan series candidates? And I have to say the answer is no.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, pitching wise, yes, but offensively, no. No, not at all.
No, because you see what, I mean, we've seen what he's done with the different players and how players have A, developed, and B, remained consistent at a high level for a long time. Now, I mean, there's no question, you know, the middle infield defense, the shift second and shortstop, and those guys, you know, losing a step here and losing a step there,
mm-hmm.
And Tanishige's age are issues that are not helping, you know, they're being dragged down by their age in the middle of the infield, but
and still they're good up the middle, but yeah.
But still they're good, but they've got replacement parts all over the place, and Ochiai is the guy who knows who's going to fit where. Then they're going to get a manager who doesn't really have a clue who's going to play where, what's going to happen next, who can do anything. He's going to have to spend the entire year evaluating talent, and given what I've seen from Morimichi Takagi in the past, he isn't going to get the job done.
Yeah,
I'll see if he's learned anything in the broadcast booth over the last 12 years.
Which brings me to my next point, which was going to be about the Hawks. They finally get through the playoff system. It's their first championship in 8 years, the fifth overall. And it looks like they could have a dynasty, and they got a manager who really wasn't afraid to go outside the norm and think outside the box and then make those moves and be responsible for them. And I was really impressed. I mean,
I'll tell you, he's such a difference from Sadaharu Oh, who's, you know, who, if you could adopt a father, Sadaharu Oh would be mine. And
but if you were adopting a manager,
not really. And you know, and he knows this, and we have talked about it. But he's just. He has a horrible record in the postseason. 2003 was a shambles. The one they won, they had no business going to seven games against the Tigers. They were full of just little, you know, seven game series don't really reflect a lot of the quality of the team, don't always reflect the quality of the team because there's so much chance involved that,
right.
You know, the better team can just play worse. For, you know, our chance can go against them and the results don't happen. You know, this can happen. But in that series, things pretty much went straight according to form, and the underpowered Tigers still took them to seven games. And if it weren't for a dumb move by Senichi Hoshino in Game 7, they might have lost it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so moving along, yeah, Akiyama was really a breath of fresh air. And I have to think that having you know, this postseason with Watanabe and Ogawa and Ochiai and Akiyama, it was a real prize. I think it was a real prize to see all that innovation and quick thinking. And the only exception, managing-wise, from Ochiai was, you know, coming out and bothering Uchikawa before he hits. You know, I don't need the gamesmanship. I really can't stand that stuff. But
I thought it was beautiful. But, I mean, yeah. You know.
Well, you know, if you're the manager, and this is the thing about baseball in Japan, if you're the manager, wherever you are, your job is to win games. Now, mm-hmm. I understand that. And it's not a knock on Ochiai that he's as obnoxious and petulant and annoying as he can. And he does all this psychological warfare, and I thought it was hilarious to hear Katsuya Nomura complain about it because they're two, you know, they come out of the same cookie cutter in that respect. They're both obnoxious and boring, and they're both cheaters. And so they are. I mean, they basically will steal everything they can get and cheat and lie, and they will cheat. I mean, they'll break if they have cameras, and I wouldn't be surprised they both got cameras in the stands, you know, stealing signs and whatever, using the video to do that. That would be perfectly up both of their alleys.
That sounds like a whole nother show, man.
Okay, well, anyway, the whole point is they'll do anything to get a win, and that's what a manager should do. The problem is not them. The problem is NPB, not doing quality control. NPB should be giving the umpires the power to move. You know, Ochiai comes out on the field to complain about something that he's got no business complaining about. Get off the field. Throw him out of the game. I'm not talking about Ochiai. Nomura,
you're gone. Field.
Yeah. You know, hurry up the game. Keep the umpires in control of the game. Speed it up. They do a decent job. There's enough of a peer pressure in America that gamesmanship tends to lose you political points in America because it's a zero sum game. But well, in Japan, it's the game.
He battled, so. You know. Akiyama battled, and you know he had some moxie out there. I dug it. I really liked the whole thing. It was a great way to finish the season. So now we have no more games to talk about. So the only thing
we'll
can talk
about the Asian
about,
series, which neither of us are going to.
Yeah, we can talk about it if it's on TV, but
not be on cable.
Yeah, I don't imagine that the Hawks will have any trouble. They were obviously the most powerful team, the strongest team in Japan. They finished off a first, which is beating every other, having a winning record against every other team, winning the league, winning the Climax Series, and now winning the Japan Series. So let's talk about some off-the-field stuff real quick.
Sure.
The Giants fired their quote-unquote GM, Hidetoshi Kiyotake, and appointed, did they appoint someone else? I didn't even
know. Well, they've sort of diversified a little bit. Now, to be honest, I can't keep up with all the people they've appointed, but they're people who are not as high up in the organization as Kiyotake was.
We call it a disbursement of responsibilities.
Yeah, I think it's sort of, they brought in a fairly recent sports editor of the Yomiuri Shimbun is officially going to be the general manager.
Mm-hmm. Someone who won't hold
Yamagishi.
Someone who won't hold rogue press conferences, huh?
Not Mr. Yama. He was the PR chief for the Giants about 4 years ago.
Okay.
And he was very good at that. He's a real gentleman. He's very soft spoken, but which is in direct contrast to Mr. Kiyotake, who could be loud and abrasive, who is apparently preparing his legal team to fight against the Giants' dismissal.
Stay tuned, folks.
This one is not over, as John said.
Yeah, this will be going ongoing for most of the off season and maybe into the next season. Who knows?
The Giants our front office is being shaken up. The BayStars apparently have decided. Now, the BayStars ownership will officially be approved on December 1st.
Uh-huh.
And their new general manager will be Shigeru Takada.
Didn't he used to manage your favorite team?
He did. He was he was successful. You know, he did. You know, he was in essence, he was a success in what they brought him in to do, which was to develop the young kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of, I don't know, it was sort of like it went to his head a little bit, and he thought, well, the kids aren't quite there, so I'm going to banish everybody who doesn't fit my mold for a ball player, the kind of team that I think we should develop. And he became a kind of an idealist, you know, like there was some sort of code to baseball that the team that won would be the team that fit the platonic image of a baseball team the best. You know, like it really wasn't about what the team could do and what the players could do and what their skills and talents were and what the conditions were. It was about the kind of team that he wanted. Instead of just, which works when you're trying to develop raw talent and you're just, you know, trying to give players jobs and try them out, when it became a question of sitting guys who could help them win games,
mm-hmm.
You know, he was, the team just went into a funk, they stopped winning. As soon as they got rid of him, bam. So that happens. But he was also, to step back there, he also had success as the general manager of the Nippon Ham Fighters.
Mm-hmm.
So when Trey Hillman was there, they were a good partnership with Toshimasa Shimada, who runs the Fighters.
Right.
They have a new general manager who works under Toshimasa Shimada, who is essentially the czar up there, but a very smart guy. And we'll see what happens with the BayStars. Other changes we have, we have a new manager in Hanshin, Yuta Kawada.
And he took over their fall camp, and he's running that.
Yeah, the Bay Stars didn't have a manager and still don't have a manager. They have released, they have told Takao Obana that he's not welcome back. So
please stay on your respite.
Yeah, well, he was on a health leave for his health. And I would hope, I have a difficult relationship with Obana because I don't really understand what it is that he's trying to accomplish, but I do understand what he has accomplished, which is, as a pitching coach, every time he's taken over a team, that team's pitchers have allowed fewer runs relative to the league than they did before, and fewer runs relative to the league than they did after he left.
Well,
he did this with the Marines, he did this with the Swallows, he did this with the Hawks, he did this with the Giants.
Maybe the Giants will have him back.
Yeah, well, they won't this next year. No, I don't think so, because that was, he left, he was so eager to get the Bay Stars job, and he did a very poor job of controlling that information, that the news leaked out that he was going to be the Bay Stars manager before the start of the Japan, the 2009 Japan series.
Mm.
And so everybody was angry with him.
All right, well, good luck to him, and hopefully he'll be back in working soon.
Yeah, one would hope that. One would hope so, because whatever it is he's doing, he's really good at it.
All right, it's time for fielding questions. All right, so Claudio in Toronto sent us another question. He says, I was listening to your show the other day, and this was volume 30, and I realized about the issue of Nobuhiro Matsunaga jumping on the field to celebrate SoftBank's advancing to the Japan Series before the game was over. It sounded like if the game ended in a tie, SoftBank would have advanced anyway. How is that? I understand tied games in the postseason pretty much didn't count. You still needed to win 4 games to be able to win a series. So could a team win a best-of-7 series with a record of 3-0-1? If you can explain it to me, I would greatly appreciate it. So, we talked to Claudio and sent him a long explanation, but Jim, if you want to explain it.
Okay, well, yeah, the answer, there's two answers to this, and one is that the difficulty here with Claudio's question is that games in the postseason, we have two kinds of games. We have Japan Series games, which you need to win four games on the field. There's no one-run advantage. There's no one-game advantage. There's no giving an advantage to the manager with the best-looking wife. There's no seeds. There's no nothing. You've got to win 4 games. Okay. Now then we get into the climax series, which is the opposite, which is just a jumble. Anyway, the climax series is the team with the best record at the end of the series gets it, with the exception that the best record, if the series is tied, it goes to the home team, which is the higher seed in the playoffs. So, yeah, if the Hawks, in this case, the Hawks won the series by clinching a tie, if the series had gone 6 games and every single one was tied, the Hawks would have won 1-0 because of their one-game advantage. Okay, I don't know.
Conversely, for example, the Lions would have needed to have, for example, a 3-2-1 record if there was a tie involved to have advanced in that series. They needed to have more wins on the field than the higher-seeded team, and that would have been an example for this season. So hopefully that gets it answered. It is confusing because we have this needless. I hate the idea of this one game advantage, this one win advantage, but the top team has to have something. They have to have something after playing 144 games.
They don't have any advantage in the United States.
Well, it's a different system. I mean, there's only six teams. And half of them make the playoffs. I don't think there's no incentive for you to actually go for it unless you're really winning something. So I think home field advantage is enough.
I would like to see the lower seed get the first game at home.
Yeah, maybe do that. Maybe have the first. You get the one win advantage if you're the higher seed, but the lower seed gets the first game at home. So If they win, then they can tie it up.
So, because the other thing is that if you're the lower seed, you make no money because of Japan's obscure, really perverse system. Anyway, moving along. So that is hopefully the answer is the Japan series. The ties don't count. You got to win four games. But here's the good thing about the Japan series is if you have to go to game nine.
Because of ties, yeah.
Because of ties, there is no limit to extra innings. The game will go until it's won.
Well, I hope
it's Japan! I hope Do you believe it?
No, I don't believe it because we'll never get to game nine, but they're going to start that game at 1 o'clock. I'll tell you that.
Okay.
All right, so next week we are going to discuss the league MVPs.
We are indeed, because John and I, for the first time this year, filled out our MVP ballots.
Ooh.
And I'm not certain I'm comfortable talking about my MVP decisions.
We don't even have to talk about who we chose. We can
discuss
candidates and
well, my question to the readers, we're so used to being writers, the listeners, is who would you pick for MVP?
Let us know. Write in and let us know. And
who's your best nine? Who are your golden gloves? If you have any preferences, we'll be glad to hear them.
And you can send that to yakyujohn@gmail.com or leave us a note on our Facebook page. Thanks a lot for listening. Great season. Great way to finish.
Otsukare-sama, everyone. Otsukare and omedeto for the Hawks.
And congratulations to the SoftBank Hawks.
And to the Dragons. And, I hope Bochy somehow he's got to get a doage somewhere because he sure as heck deserves it.
Well, he'll be back. He will be back. And we will be back as well. And we will stay with you throughout the off season.
He could be the manager of the Bay Stars.
Now, that would be hard for me. More conflict. Would that
be intriguing?
More inner conflict. But, the job's still open, so.
Inner conflict.
You never know. You never know. All right. Thank you for listening, and enjoy your off season.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.